Hi, it's Rabbi Jim Egolf. I want to thank you so much for joining me this week. We had a guest speaker at Beth David this past week, a Rabbi Baker from the American Jewish Committee. Rabbi Baker spoke to us on issues of which he is an expert, namely anti-Semitism around the world, and especially in Europe. And I think that you'll find this talk interesting. You can contact me at RAVJIM, that's RavJim@AOL.com, or you can Skype me at either RavJim or by calling me at 610-624-3441. I thank you so much for joining me. Have a good week. Bachelor's degree from Wesleyan University and a master's degree in rabbinic ordination from Hebrew Union College Institute of Religion in New York City. He is past president of the Interfaith Conference of Washington and former commissioner on the District of Columbia Human Rights Commission. He was the only non-congregational rabbi to serve as president of the Washington Board of Rabbis. He is married and has four children. Rabbi Baker joined the American Jewish Committee in 1979 and is now Director of International Jewish Affairs. He's a leading expert on anti-Semitism in Europe and on the challenges facing Jewish communities, including Holocaust restitution issues. From 1992 until 2000, Rabbi Baker served as Director of European Affairs and was instrumental in developing and implementing programs to promote tolerance in the newly emerging democracies of Central and Eastern Europe. In 2003, he was awarded the Officer's Cross of the Order of Merit of the Federal Republic of Germany for his work in German-Jewish relations. He is a Vice President of the Conference on Jewish Material Claims Against Germany. He is a member of government communications in both the Czech Republic and Slovakia that address the claims of Holocaust victims, and is a member of the National Historical Commission of Lithuania. He has spoken on the subject of Jewish property restitution, anti-Semitism, and related issues at the United States Department, the Housing Banking Commission, the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, the Helsinki Commission, and the Parliamentary Assembly of the Council of Europe. Rabbi Baker is a past president of the Interfaith Conference of Washington, a past president of the Washington Board of Rabbis, and former commissioner on the District of Columbia Human Rights Commission. So it's my privilege and our honor to invite Rabbi Baker to speak to us from the meeting this evening. Thank you.
Thank you. It's a great pleasure to be here, and thank you very much. Thanks for your warmth and your hospitality, and it's been a joy to be in the sanctuary this Shabbat evening as well. What I wanted to do, and as I understand, I'm going to speak to you now for a while here, and then during the Oni we can have more of a discussion back and forth, questions and answers. And it won't go on too long because I still have a train to catch at the end of the evening to go back to Washington. I don't know whether that's a threat or a promise to you. Take it as you wish. What I'd like to do is say a little bit first about the problem of anti-Semitism, again, primarily focused in Europe, how we came to recognize it, and what's really been done about it, as well as really leading up to the difficulties we face today, because I think there has been much progress, and yet at the same time, this is not a problem that by any means has disappeared. I can recall in our own work at the American Jewish Committee a decade ago, particularly with some of the new revived Jewish communities in Central and Eastern Europe, partners in the Jewish communities in Western Europe, joining together one occasion for an international conference on planning for the future of European Jewry. In the mid-90s, it took place.
And looking back, the subject of anti-Semitism was almost nowhere to be found on the agenda. There were a lot of questions about dealing with an open society for these new communities in the former communist world, issues about intermarriage and assimilation, difficulties in the dynamics in the relationship between European Jews and Israel, between European Jews and Jewish communities in the United States. But there was very much a sense, I think, that anti-Semitism was receding into the past. What we saw, I think, in this last decade has changed all of us. And in a way, I tell you this first anecdote to say how relatively unexpected it was. Not that people had thought anti-Semitism had disappeared, but if, as we sometimes speak of it, think of anti-Semitism as a kind of virus, then I think most of us had felt, well, it was under control. We could live with it. It may never disappear entirely. But Jewish life really had very much about it that was optimistic, that was forward-looking, and for which the problem of anti-Semitism was thought by many to be largely an historical one. In 2001, we, I think, had a wake-up call. People are aware, I believe, of what's sometimes referred to as Durban, simply Durban, but the UN World Conference Against Racism, which gathered the end of August, beginning of September in that year, was meant to be an international effort to focus on the problem of racism around the world. In fact, there had been preparatory conferences, and one of them took place in Europe, in Strasbourg, in the previous March. At the time, the issue of anti-Semitism was present, largely in order that it be identified as one of the problems to be confronted, recognizing that it too was a form of racism. But Jewish organizations, the United States, and other governments found themselves in Durban confronted with what was really a kind of anti-Semitic hate fest, a revival of the canard that Zionism is a form of racism, attacks not only on the Jewish state, on the state of Israel, but literally attacks and even intimidation, physical intimidation, toward the Jewish delegates of various NGOs that were present there. What we found, too, in the months that followed, was a dramatic increase in attacks on Jewish targets in Europe, particularly in France, in Belgium, in the Netherlands, attacks on synagogues, on Jewish students, on individual Jews, the desecrations of cemeteries and the like, and something that aroused the anxiety, the fears of communities in Europe, even as they were relatively ignored by the political leadership. And I think it was this disconnect that brought us, when I say us, I mean not only the American Jewish Committee, but American Jewry, into focusing on this concern. Now, these events paralleled the breakdown in the Middle East peace process, the Second Intifada. And one often heard from European leaders that these attacks were somehow political in nature, related to the Middle East, and therefore not really anti-Semitism at all. Most of them emanated from Arab and Muslim communities in Europe, communities that themselves were not well integrated into the larger society, where there clearly were a lot of difficulties to begin with. But there was a tendency to dismiss them as acts of vandalism by unemployed and disgruntled youth. They took pains to point out that there were also attacks on other targets in Europe, not only Jewish targets. But in fact, in France and Belgium, the organized communities identified and began to record these attacks, which demonstrated that they were taking place in a remarkably high number of instances, even as the government itself tended to take a blind eye to them. So ironically, in a way, it was being forced to confront the problem here in the United States as European leaders visited here, visited America, that they began to be forced to recognize that they had to deal with the problem inside Europe. What we saw was, I would say, a kind of twofold situation. First, the problem of the attacks themselves. But secondly, and maybe even of greater significance, the reality that in the larger society, there was not a recognition, not a willingness to confront and to see them for what they were. The source of those attacks could be defined. And if you spoke to Jewish leaders in France, for example, they certainly would not have changed their own situation for that of French Muslims, a community that was significantly larger and has been growing and confronts its own problems of discrimination in society. But if it was only an issue of that community, I think it would not have been so difficult. But there was very much a sense on the part of these Jewish communities that they were being abandoned by their own friends, their own political leadership. Again, because of the events in the Middle East, political leaders tended to dismiss these acts or to even blame them on events taking place in Israel, on the Israeli leaders themselves. The kind of media coverage of what took place, what was taking place in the Middle East, in Europe, was dramatically different and far more negative than what one would see in the United States. And that surely, too, contributed to the problem. I can recall a very small dinner that I was invited to in 2003 when Javier Solana, the foreign policy czar, really, of the European Union, was visiting Washington. And I was asked to come precisely to discuss with him the problem of anti-Semitism. And when I did present it to him, he said to me, in all sincerity, "I don't see it." He then went on, "Help me understand more. I'm open to learning, but I don't see it." And I think it demonstrated the difficulty that we faced during those years when the attacks were increasing to their highest point. Most European countries had no mechanism for monitoring these kinds of hate crimes, for reporting them, for identifying them as acts of anti-Semitism. And so in the end, there was literally no data. There were literally no reports that these things were happening. In fact, it led the umbrella organization of French Jewry to commission its own report to be able to identify, to be able to enumerate what was taking place. We also confronted a socialist government in France that was quite clearly in denial and bristled at the charge that anti-Semitism was re-emerging in this place. Clearly they had their own difficulties with their Muslim community and did not wish to acknowledge this problem. It was only, I think, because we could engage United States leaders to make this an issue in their own discussions, in their own meetings with European leaders, such as when Solana visited the United States, or when U.S. congressmen and others visited Europe. In fact, there was a Senate delegation at the time led by Joe Biden, which had traveled to Paris in 2003, and quite pointedly, before they visited French President Chirac, it was arranged, we had helped them arrange a meeting with the leaders of French Jewry. I think it was sufficient that they met first with French Jewish leaders before they visited the president. That ultimately led the president to say he was creating a special commission in France to look into the problem. Really the first step on the part of that French leadership to acknowledge, to begin to look at the difficulty itself. So you have the problem of the incidents, but you have maybe even more severely a problem of political leadership of the establishment that didn't want to recognize this for what it was, a form of anti-Semitism. There had been operating in Europe for several years a monitoring center, a European Union, now a European Union agency, but an arm of the European Union, designed to monitor, to record acts of racism and xenophobia. But it was not until 2004 that it conducted its first analysis, its first survey of the problem of anti-Semitism. And essentially, this report was two reports. One tried to put together what could be found in terms of data, in terms of attitude surveys in the then 15 EU countries. A second part of this report was a compilation of interviews that had taken place with European Jewish leaders or representatives from at least seven of the EU countries. Now, in the first report, you could see how in various countries the problem itself had increased. Acts of violence or desecrations were counted. You could look at different attitudes as reflected in some of the opinion surveys that were conducted. And you had a picture, a mixed picture, depending on the country, of the problem itself. But when you looked at the report of interviews conducted with Jewish leaders, I think that was the most striking and, in a way, the most frightening of this overall analysis. Because you had French Jewish leaders, you had Belgian Jewish leaders, you had others who were really sharing their anxieties, their fears. Some people had said, and maybe too quickly and glibly at the time, that somehow this is a recurrence, a return to the 1930s. I think that was a terrible inaccuracy. But you could say that you saw a level of anxiety, a level of concern on the part of European Jewish leaders in many of these countries that one had not seen for many decades. Some who had survived the Holocaust, who had rebuilt their lives in these European countries, were now questioning the wisdom of having done so. We all have our own anecdotal accounts. I have memories of a close friend who was a leader, a professional, working all of his adult life in the Council of Europe in Strasbourg. A French Jew who had, with his family, survived the Holocaust by hiding out in Alsace and returning and building his life and tying his life to what he thought was the importance of these new democratic institutions in Europe. I recall him during these days calling me, wondering, in Canada perhaps, would the law degrees of his daughters be acceptable? It was striking to me that for the first time, I could see in my friend's question a real debate as to what the future held for his own family or for others in Europe. This was the nature, I think, of what we saw in 2003 and 2004. And it caught all of us, I think, in a very sharp and difficult way. While I focus here on Western Europe largely, it would be a mistake to ignore what was also taking place in Central and Eastern Europe. With the fall of communism, with the advent of democracy, there were clearly enormous positive opportunities, not only for the societies in these countries, but for their small Jewish communities, for the most part, remnant communities, shadows of what existed before the Holocaust, but still a revival that I think was enormously heartening and which struck many people too as something that was surprising. We had, I think, perhaps closed the door to the future of Jewish life in places like Poland, Hungary, Czechoslovakia, the Baltic states, and others. And yet, these small communities reformed. And new life really was breathed into them. These countries were eager to cement their relationship with the West. Many of them sought membership in NATO, ultimately membership in the European Union. There was an opportunity to press them, to confront the histories that they never did themselves during those years of communism. What happened during the Holocaust? And so there were different efforts, in some cases leading to the creation of national historical commissions that sought to examine openly and critically what took place during the Holocaust, that clearly would draw a path to an acknowledgement, to a recognition of the role of some of those countries, either as Nazi puppet states or perhaps occupied countries, but nevertheless with collaborators in their midst, and to address those questions that were never answered. This came about also at a time where you had movements to revive rehabilitate the memory of some fascist era heroes in these countries. Father Tiso in Slovakia or Marcel Antonescu in Romania, as these countries sought to reclaim their own national identity, they looked back to a period that was, to say the least, problematic, and often one where anti-Semitism or support of Nazi ideology and Nazi practices was integrated, was part of those political movements in the 30s and 40s. And so these countries were pressed to confront their past, countries who certainly saw themselves as having been victims for decades under communism. It was not an easy experience. I think here too, one can point to progress that was made, but it also generated its own form of anti-Semitism. Open societies were free not only to publish newspapers without government controls, that had been the case for decades, but they were free to publish anti-Semitic materials as well. We would get calls from Jewish leaders in these countries. Someone is bringing out copies of Mein Kampf, of the Protocols. What do we do? How do you control it in the United States, they would ask us. And it led to very difficult exchanges to try to say, well, all of these things can be published in the United States, but you need to develop a civil society that can respond, that can react. You need to have political leaders that will speak out against these manifestations of anti-Semitism. And so even as we were confronting these problems in Western Europe that took us by surprise, we could see as that communist era disappeared, new problems emerging in Central and in Eastern Europe.